But without further ado, I want to introduce the speaker for this evening, and that is Susan H., who is coming up on 25 years of abstinence any day now. And here she is, Susan H.
Thank you. Oh, my. Hi, peeps. I'm Susan. I'm a compulsive overeater. About the biggest group I've ever spoken in front of. I'm actually coming up on 24 years. And January 19th, OA's birthday, is also my OA birthday. Yeah. So this is quite an honor and a privilege, and I thank the committee for asking me to speak tonight. Really? It needs to be louder? I hate kissing the mic. What? No, I like kissing Jim. So just to qualify a bit, my top weight was somewhere over 200 pounds. I did stop weighing. I really can't do this the whole night. I'll do that. No, because then they'll have squeaks and... Oh, great. I stopped weighing somewhere before 200 pounds because I didn't want to know what it said because I couldn't do anything about what the scale said. So I never actually saw the scale go over 200 pounds, but I continued to eat quite a lot after I stopped weighing. So I have lost somewhere around 80 pounds. Not sure how much that is. And thank you. I have heard people say that's for God when people applaud abstinence and weight loss, and really the only thing I can take credit for is that I keep coming back, and I keep putting one foot in front of the other, and I keep doing the work, and I keep working the program no matter what happens. I've never said screw it, and that's what has kept me coming back along with service, but I'll probably get to that. So I do want to tell you my story briefly. I started overeating very young, and I was just telling some people at my table that I think I became an overeater because I needed something long before I could get to drugs or sex or alcohol. And I don't know if overeaters are made or born. I don't know if I was made an overeater by circumstance or if I was born that way, and it doesn't matter. I am one. It doesn't matter how I got this way. And I also don't mind saying that I'm a compulsive overeater. It's not anything negative. To me, it's like the sky is blue and the trees are green and I'm a compulsive overeater. It's like saying my shoe size is a size 9. I'm not going to change it into a size 8 or a size 7 is perfect shoe size for a woman. And I'm short. I'm 5'3" and I have a size 9 foot. It's really unusual and that's not going to change. Just like being a compulsive overeater isn't going to change. So I don't need to say anything except I'm a compulsive overeater and remember who and what I am. And that's my disease. That's my illness, is that I forget. I want to forget who and what I am and be a normal eater. This time will be different, is my disease. And so I started when I was 8, at least. And I know that I started when I was 8 because I stole candy from stores and got caught and got in a lot of trouble. And I was a very good little girl and stole again and got in more trouble. So at 8 years old, I was an addict looking for my fix. And my parents were divorced when I was 8, and I have a twin brother who went to live with my dad. So I really felt like I was losing the two men in my life. And I have this great line now that tells you my whole story. I just celebrated a landmark birthday, and I have a twin brother. And my family planned a surprise birthday party for him and invited me. That pretty much tells you what my childhood was like. Yeah. And they couldn't figure out why I had to think about it. They were very upset that I had to think about it. And I'll just tell you that briefly. So then I just made sure that I was going to have a very good birthday of my own. And then I did go celebrate his birthday. and had a great time because I'm the one who's working a program. I'm the one who needs to walk the walk. And I did. I went and I was very gracious and I loved celebrating his birthday and he was very gracious about making it our birthday. So my teen years were about my weight, dieting, food weight and body size. I spent at least a decade thinking completely about that. If I could just lose weight, everything would be all right. If I could lose weight, I'd have a boyfriend. If I could lose weight, my family would love me. If I could lose weight, if I could lose weight, if I could lose weight. And today when I still get into that, if I could, you know, if I could just lose another 5 pounds, something will be all right. And my sponsor has told me that that's my best friend, that it's like a blanket for me, and that fat, feeling fat is not a feeling. And what's really going on? If I feel fat, I need to ask myself, what is really going on here? It's no different than wanting a cookie. It's the same thing. I have to ask myself, okay, what's going on? So I did every diet there was to do, and the only reason I stayed a slim, trim 200 pounds is because I dieted. I'm definitely a 400, 500-pound eater. So I actually think of myself as bulimic, though I didn't purge in the normal way. My purge was dieting. So I was good girl, bad girl, good girl, bad girl. Dieting, binging. It's, you know, it's all the same thing. It was a roller coaster, and eventually I decided to stop dieting because I figured out on my very own that dieting meant weight gain. A year from now, 2 years, whenever, it meant that I was going to be heavier in the end. So I stopped dieting, and I tried all kinds of other things. And I also, is anybody timing me? Oh, that's bad. Okay. I think I got it. I do this all the time. Where was I? Oh, so I stopped it. So I did every diet that you pay for. I did every diet in the magazines. I lost a bunch of weight. I always gained it. So then I stopped dieting and I did more sophisticated things. Pretty much everything that's out there, I think I did. But it was before the medical things were available except for wiring your jaw shut. And I just knew that that wasn't going to keep the food out of me, so I didn't do that. But I did eat what you're feeling deprived of, and eventually you won't feel deprived of that anymore. Yes. There is not enough chocolate in the world for me. I have heard people say that they've had more than their fair share of whatever it was they ate, and so they don't need it today, and I think I haven't. I haven't had my fair share of chocolate. There's just, because there's no such thing as that. It's endless. So that didn't work. There were programs where I could blame it on my mother. There's one I loved where if you just really taste your food and allow yourself to be satisfied, you can be satisfied and stop. There were just lots of things. I did therapy. I did group therapy. I did group therapy for bulimics. And none of them worked. And I ended up coming to Overeaters Anonymous. Well, let me talk to you a little bit about my eating. So I would steal money. And actually, I was in college, so I skipped school. I was living at home because I couldn't function on my own. This is where food brought me. I couldn't keep my waitressing jobs. I couldn't keep my alcoholic boyfriends. I crashed my cars, and I was homeless. That's what food did to me. That's what overeating did to me. I'm a low-bottom eater, and I cannot function when I'm overeating. And so I was not going to college. I was living at home, and I instead of going to school, I just went up University Avenue and went in one place and then the next and the next and the next and the next all day long. And then I came home, waited until everyone was asleep, stole money from pockets. Actually, I kited checks and stole money from pockets and went to the grocery store, bought a bunch of stuff, came home, still wasn't fixed. So then I went out in the middle of the night and went from place to place to place. And I knew what was open when. I knew what opened early, because, you know, this could be 4 or 5 in the morning. I knew what opened early and was baking things. I knew what was open all night and was baking things. I knew what was fresh and warm and gooey and when and where. And it was this ritual that I had all night. And I remember one time specifically, in about 2 months' time, I gained 40 pounds. So when I say I could be a 400 or 500 pound person, I absolutely could be. And it's very important for me to remember where I come from. There's a phrase, a slogan that I used to hear that I don't hear much anymore, called "Remember When." And it's really important for me to remember where I'll go if I start in on that again. And where I ended up was on the floor with a glass of water, not able to move, hoping that a glass of water would help me feel better. And then the minute I wasn't stuffed to the gills, I ate some more, because reality was so intolerable for me. So I just didn't want to be in reality. I wanted food to take me out of reality. So I eventually came here because one of the alcoholic boyfriends that I couldn't keep sobered up. And I thought, if he can do it, so can I. So somehow I knew that this was an addiction. And when I got here, I didn't, in a way, I didn't even care about the weight. I know a lot of you say you came for the vanity and stayed for the sanity. I came for the sanity. I just wanted to stop doing what I was doing. I knew it was a dreadful way to live. I didn't know if I believed in God, but I said in my car one night, if this is the way it's going to keep going, take me now. And I meant it, and I fully expected to go over the side of the cliff, and I didn't. And I thought, oh, there's hope then. And about 2 months later, I ended up in these rooms. So I got in these rooms, and it was different. You weren't talking about behavior modification. You didn't have a little weight problem. You didn't just like food. You know, all these things that I'd heard all my life. You were doing what I was doing. In fact, when I was getting nervous about speaking, I remembered something Roseanne has said, and that is, you know, you've all eaten out of the garbage too. So why should I be nervous? I have eaten out of the garbage, and I know that not all of you have, but we have the same illness. So I was willing to do whatever you told me to do. And I was so desperate that I did it pretty quickly. Admitted I was powerless over food and that my life was unmanageable. And what that means to me is that I admit that I cannot control it. So I don't try to be a normal eater. When I try to be a normal eater, I'm in trouble. And my sponsor has always said, make commitments you can keep. Make a daily commitment that you can keep. Sometimes it looks like a diet. Sometimes it doesn't look like a diet. And if I don't keep that commitment, I'm accountable for whatever it is I ate. So for 24 years, this 19th, someone will have known what's been going in this body. And that's really important, so that there aren't any secrets. You know, I just don't get into shame and secrecy around my food. So I admit that I can't control this thing. Now, I have seen people in these rooms who have been able to eat whatever they want 3 times a day and stop when they're satisfied or stop when they're full. And God, I want to be one of those people. And I've tried really hard to be one of those people. And I have failed every single time. So I have a long-standing track record that tells me when I eat specific things, I have trouble. I end up nose down in it. So eventually, I had to really get honest with myself. So when I got here, I stopped overeating at what I call the lethal level. I got down into normal sizes, and I was just thrilled to be normal sized and to be able to shop in normal stores. That was good. I wanted to be thinner, and also I got to tell you, I was here for a long time at that size and experienced some judgment, and I went to meetings where it was safe, where it was safe to tell the truth, safe to say what was going on for me, and where the love is. And I know today, absolutely, I'm going to talk a little bit more about that, go where the love is. So I was abstinent in January and went home for my first abstinent Christmas. to my family and couldn't believe what hit me. I was in reality. I was not sedated. I was not anesthetized. I had a commitment that I kept for Christmas. And the reality of my family, it could have just knocked me over. And I was in so much pain. So I had to overeat to believe the family mythology. And the family mythology was that I was fat, ugly, stupid, overly emotional, and overly sensitive. And I look at myself today with all the love that you've given me and think, what were they thinking? Where did they get that? Well, they needed that. They, you know, I was their cookie. I was their feeling fat. If Susan would just change, we'd be fine. And most of that was about the weight. If Susan would just lose weight, she'd be fine. Well, how much did I have to change to make them okay? I learned that the hard way with my husband. How much did he have to change to make me okay? There was no... I'm just remembering when I heard someone at a podium say that, and I thought, oh, this is different. He does have to change. I always lose my train of thinking. I think I'm a little bit ADD. I think a lot of us are. Oh, thank you. So I get home from Christmas in a lot of pain, and my sponsor says, you should write a fourth step. So I wrote. And I was ready to give it to her in a week. And the fifth step is never a problem for me because I'm just really excited to have somebody listen to me. Because remember, I didn't get invited to my landmark birthday party. And then I made amends because my very first sponsor told me step 6 and 7 aren't very important. There's only two paragraphs devoted to them in the big book, and the big book was written by a bunch of sex addicts anyway. Could be, I don't know, but I got a new sponsor. And came back to step 6 and 7. And actually step 6 and 7 are the magic steps to me. That's where I experienced the psychic change. So for example, in that first inventory, the fear of loss came up because my father died and the divorce and lots. And then I had a stepfather and some problems with all that. You know, we all have our deals. And again, I don't know if that made me a compulsive overeater or not. I just know it took me out of, overeating took me out of that. So, see, mid-sentence. So I asked for 6 and 7. So I asked for the fear of loss to be removed. And I started losing things. I lost my wallet. I lost one of my dearest friends to cancer. I was one of her primary caretakers. And I learned not to be afraid of loss anymore. Loss doesn't get taken away from me. I'm not afraid of it anymore because I had to face it head on and learn that I can do it. Well, that's what happens for me. Step 7 is not for the weak of heart. In fact, I think the AA 12 and 12 says this is what separates the men from the boys. It's a little sexist, but I can deal with it. So I have to be ready for all kinds of stuff to happen to give me that psychic change. The woman you see before you, I'm sure you would never guess, went to jail and couldn't keep her bartending jobs and, you know, all that stuff. I mean, I have a highly functioning life today. And I have to be abstinent to do that. Because if I'm not abstinent, I'm going to be on the floor with a glass of water, nose down. A friend of mine says, have a snapshot in your head of what it was like so that you can quickly go to remember when. Because when my brain says, this time will be different, I can think about being on the floor with that glass of water and remember, it's not going to be different this time. So every time that I have worked the steps, magic has happened. Magic. I didn't get it from therapy. I didn't get it. I was a seeker before I got here. I went into all these spiritual places and tried different religions, and none of that worked until I got here, where my life was on the line. And I was, again, willing to take direction. So when I say that I am that I can't control. I cannot control these things. For me, it's sugar and chocolate. I can't control these, and my life is unmanageable. I have to remember what that unmanageability looks like. And I used to get it. I used to be, as soon as my eyes opened, I would say the third step prayer every morning and do prayer and meditation in bed. And it's, recently it has stopped working for me. So now I'm going over the first three steps every morning, reminding myself that I can't control sugar and chocolate and that my life is unmanageable and what that looks like. Came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. So then I have to remember insanity. And I know that some people struggle with that word. But with my track record, the idea of thinking that this time will be different is insane. And if I can think of it as a disease, I can certainly think of it as a disorder. You know, medicine is calling it a disorder these days. And it certainly, in my mind, is a mental illness. And the movie A Beautiful Mind really helped me. It's about a schizophrenic, if you haven't seen it. And at the end, he comes to peace with it. He just knows that sometimes he hallucinates. And I realized, oh, that's me. I just have to know sometimes my brain says, this time it's going to be different. And it's just blah, 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 blah. Thank you. And know that it's crazy. You know, I've never had a successful experience in a donut shop. My problem is that I have had some success sometimes with other things, and then I think the next time I'll have success. But I really don't get away with it, because since I had success that time, I can have success again. And then again, and then tomorrow, and then today, and then lunch, dinner, breakfast, and I'm in trouble. So again, I've had to find out on my own what works for me and what doesn't work for me. So I had stopped eating at the lethal level, and I was not willing to ask for perfectionism to be removed until I had been in the program for 14 years, because I wasn't willing to start making mistakes. And eventually, the pain of perfectionism outweighed its usefulness. So I did a 6 and 7 step on it and asked God to remove perfectionism from me. And I honestly am not a perfectionist anymore. Obviously, if I can get up and forget 5 times what I'm talking about in the middle of a sentence. I really am not. And, you know, it was a killer for me. And here's what I believe my higher power gave me to overcome perfectionism. I could not lose weight to save my life. In these rooms, I stayed a size 14, bounced back between a 12, 14, and a 16 for many, many years. And I made myself okay with that. Not all of you were okay with it, but I was okay with it. It was hard work. It was hard spiritual and emotional work. And for a compulsive overeater who's a perfectionist, what better lesson could I get than having an average body? So I, and a number of other things happened too, I was able to let go of perfectionism. And about that time, my mother became very sick with emphysema, continued to smoke, which I understand, and she stopped smoking when she thought she, when it looked like she might die. She caught a cold, and it looked like she might die, so she stopped smoking and gained a bunch of weight, not surprisingly. And she wouldn't buy any clothes. So she's 75. She's on oxygen. She's declining from emphysema, and she wouldn't buy any clothes because she was worried about the size of her ass. She really was. And I thought, God help me. Just God help me. I don't want to be thinking about the size of my ass when I'm 75 years old and possibly declining. I got to tell you, the 70-year-old that I've seen here this weekend, I want to be when I'm 70 years old. So I started praying. I meditate on our literature. I love our literature. I'll just pick a passage and study it for 30 days. So I studied acceptance for page 449 for 30 days. I studied the third step for 30 days. I studied all kinds of sections in the 12th step in the AA 12 and 12 when I needed to know more about money and financial stuff and ego. It's all there for me. And I was studying the OA 12 and 12, and in it, glasses, in it, it says, we became aware of what our eating guidelines should be. We ask God for the willingness and the ability to live within them each day. We ask and we receive, first the willingness and then the ability. We can count on this without fail. So I turned that into a prayer. I asked God to show me my eating guidelines and to give me the willingness and the ability to live within them each day. And then I was directed to an outside weight loss enterprise through prayer and meditation, and it was the perfect one for me. Now, I thought I was an expert on nutrition. I'm assuming you all are, too. I thought I knew everything there was to know about nutrition, and I've been a nutritionist, and, you know, I've read it all. And this place told me stuff I didn't know. I've learned how my body reacts to things that I didn't know. For instance, I ate potatoes at dinner tonight. I knew that I was going to be eating potatoes at dinner tonight. I committed to the potatoes at dinner tonight. And I know I'm going to have to watch and see if any cravings are going to creep up. They might. I don't know. I just know that a certain number of carbohydrates in my body creates cravings. So if I have a craving, I've either created it somehow with what I've eaten or something's going on. So if I start to obsess about something, I have some work to do. And most of that work is outlined in this book. So I then stopped overeating at the non-lethal level and lost more weight. And if you told me it would take that long when I first got in here, I probably would have run the other way. But I lost it when I could, because it really is a whole different world. Each bit of weight that I've lost, I'm more awake and more present. And what keeps me abstaining is wanting to be present, wanting to be awake, wanting guidance for my life. My life doesn't work if I can't pay attention, and I cannot pay attention if I'm overeating. I'm just out of it. That's the whole point, to take me out. I've heard some people talk about the still small voice. I have a big screaming voice, and it takes a lot of food to shut that voice up. I don't want to hear it. So a lot of my recovery is to know what I know, see what I see, hear what I hear, and say what I have to say. And in doing that, I've also had to be willing to be disliked. Because if I do all that, not everyone's going to like me. But the alternative is overeating. I got an email once, and it's recently circulated again, and I just love it. It's an acronym for guidance, GUI. God, you and I dance. Guidance. Yeah, that's how I felt about it too. And that's why I abstain, so that I can receive the guidance and so that I can dance. So I came to OA and got out of the gutter. And when I got out of the gutter, I felt like OA got me on the sidewalk, but I wanted to fly. And I came across another passage in the big book telling me that we have been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence that we never dreamt of. And I thought, well, where the hell is that? I'm not experiencing that. And one of the things we don't talk a lot about is the pain of abstinence, because we're living in reality. So, you know, sometimes it's joyful and wonderful and delightful, and sometimes it's really hard. And I think I forget what I'm saying when I scare myself. Makes sense, doesn't it? I know overeat is hard. Yeah, fourth dimension of existence. Oh, yeah. So I wanted to get off the sidewalk and I wanted to fly. But beginning recovery is really about cleaning up the wreckage of your past. And for me, it took me about 10 years at least to do that. And a lot of that was just me and amends to myself. And, you know, it wasn't, first it was cash box honesty, and then it was started, instead of character defects, it was beliefs, ideas that no longer serve me. So the fourth column in the inventory can be a character defect or a pattern or a behavior, something that just doesn't serve me anymore. And then the magic happens, and then life changes, and then my life gets bigger and bigger. I really am off track. Okay, so I wanted to fly. And I didn't feel like I was. And I complained about that at a retreat, and the leader of that retreat said, I was 2 years old at the time, the leader said, Richie K, said, why don't you have lunch with me in 8 years and tell me how you feel? And I did. And I definitely felt like I had received the promises of the program by then, and that I had been rocketed into a fourth dimension. So here's how it works for me. I work the steps, I use the tools, I do service. I'm doing good. And sometimes that fails me too. And that's when I absolutely have to have a power greater than myself. So I was in the coffee bean getting a sugar-free something, and the cases started to look intriguing to me. So I just thought, I'm just going to recreate and look. Always a bad idea. You know, when I see the assigned bakery, it's like... Still, and then, but you know, I'm not in charge of my first thought. I'm only in charge of the second thought. And the second thought is, oh, honey bunch. You silly girl. I decided today would be different at the coffee bean. And then I said the Overeater's Prayer, which I also heard today, which is help. And I actually say those prayers out loud just because I'm superstitious. I have no idea what's out there. Maybe there are angels. Maybe they need to actually hear it from me. I don't know what I say. And I happen to be a Frank Sinatra fan. I don't know about the man. I just like his music a lot and know his music well. And no sooner than did I pray that prayer, up comes, come fly with me, come fly, come fly. Right, it's like, oh, you want the gutter, Susan, or do you want to go fly with your higher power? Well, duh. So it's amazing how I get help. And just last week, I thought I could have a successful experience in a donut shop. Right, this is 24 years later. I've been so grateful to hear old-timers speak today to say that sometimes they still obsess. And the big book tells me that if I do not recoil from it as if from a hot flame, it's because I'm not in fit spiritual condition. So in the one of the workshops today, they asked us a question, what would I change about my abstinence? And personally, this is just my opinion. For me, I don't have the power to change that. So I changed that question to, what can I change in my program? And today, what I can change in my program is go into deeper meditation. Forgot again. The donut shop, thank you. The reason I keep looking there is because that's my husband. So, right. So I'm in this part of town that I have a really good sense of direction. I don't always know what street I'm on. I don't know where I know where I'm going to end up usually, but I almost always know what's north and south and east and west. It's taken me a while to realize that not everyone has that. And I just always know. Well, I was romancing the donuts. I called my sponsor and talked to her, got a plan for the evening. And then after the evening was over, I was still thinking about the donuts. And I knew for sure this time would be different. And I said the prayer, and I got lost. Really lost. I was actually in Hollywood and ended up in Glendale. I didn't even tell my husband that because it was so ridiculous. I was like, you're gonna be kidding. It was so clear. And then I got to I found a freeway entrance. I knew, okay, at Brand, I know where I am. I'll just keep going at Brand and there will be a freeway entrance. And it took me completely around the donut shop that I was romancing. And that's how it works. If I could rely on my own unsteady willpower, I would. But I can't. So I have to do all the things that you tell me to do. And I've been doing them for almost 24 years, in a few days from now. So I'm going to Fast forward. One of the things that keeps me abstaining is that I want clarity. My sponsor told me a long time ago, when the knife goes in, you want it to go in clean and come out clean. And if you're not abstaining, it goes, you know, there's all this drama around it and it's true. If I eat sugar, I'm going to cry. I'm going to think it's his fault. But it's not. It's because I ate sugar. The depression and the sadness and the moodiness comes from the chemical for me. I have a chemical change in my body that happens that I have to be very honest about. I don't overeat because of the depression and the moodiness. That all straightens out when I clean up my food. So it's important to me to have this clean, clear instrument. This is my body, this is my instrument, this is what God gave me to work with in this lifetime. And again, my sponsor said this beautifully. This is a crystal, so I can't do it, but you know, on a glass, when you do that, some of you may have heard me say this, if the glass is too full, it goes, and if there's not enough water in it, it goes, and I've been stark raving abstinent before, absolutely. And if there's just enough water in it, it goes, and that's my goal. I want to be that kind of instrument. So it's really important that I pay attention. I pay attention to what's going on and get guidance. God, you and I dance. So I went home for Christmas this year. There's a new person in our family. Home in Seattle was. And my sister just got married. She's 49 and just got married for the first time. And I don't know why this guy thinks that I'm fat, ugly, stupid, overly sensitive, and overly emotional. And I don't know, maybe my sister taught him that. I don't know where it came from. I think it's because I told him how I felt once. And he tore me a new one. And I went and did a four step and a six and seven step. There's a whole other great story to go with that. The magic for that happened to me in the Grand Canyon on a mule, where I had my psychic change and where I get, because the guide started screaming and yelling at me, and that was like 10 minutes after I asked for these things to be removed. It's like, oh, it's not about me. It's him. So I got home for Christmas this year, and my family, it took me 20 years to teach them how to treat me. And now they're treating me like they did 20 years ago. And it's not okay. That's why I say go where the love is. It's not okay for them to treat me like that anymore. And I'm not going to spend another 20 years teaching them how to treat me either. So my food was really clean during the holidays. And I did it intentionally. And I did a lot of OA work and let it all go in. Felt it all. And that's what guides me in my life. And I got really sad, really sad. And I was feeling so beat up that then I called all my friends who were from that time in my life and said, I'm done. I'm not seeing anyone anymore for the rest of this trip. So my husband and Joy took walks and went to movies and enjoyed ourselves. And in that week, I was going to lots of meetings, and I heard someone say, I have to take care of myself or I'll die. And people kind of laughed, like, oh, that's a little extreme. And I thought, oh, no, it's not. And I changed that motto. I changed that into a motto for me, self-care or die. And if I don't take care of myself, I can go back to that 300 or 400 pound eater. I may not have another diet in me, so I may be 300 or 400 pounds, and I might not survive. And I certainly will be the walking dead. So I do have to take care of myself. I did spend 3 days with my family. I was done. I didn't know I was done, actually, but then I thought, self-care or die. Okay, I'm done. And I was done, and I came home and have been in a process of grieving. I'm definitely letting them go. I'm not going to go there next Christmas. I'm not up for it. I don't deserve it. And I want to go where the love is. I don't know where that's going to be next Christmas, but I know it's not going to be there because guess what? There's a track record. And I need to pay attention. And I can't pay attention if I'm overeating. So I overate to make myself small. I overate not to make myself comfortable. I saw this wonderful phrase at a retreat. It was just on the table and it said, if food is comforting, are you comfortable? And I realized I overate to make everyone else comfortable. I overate to make them comfortable because God forbid I should be too big, too much. God forbid I should have a feeling because that's what happened to me this year with my new brother-in-law. God forbid I should have a feeling or an opinion or be passionate about something and be threatening. Well, guess what? I'm a woman to be reckoned with. And I will not kill off my spirit. That's what overeating was for me. It was an attempt to kill off my spirit because the people around me wanted it dead. And I won't do that anymore. I don't care what happens. I don't care who I lose. I don't care where I am. I will not kill off my spirit anymore. Oh, isn't that nice? So, I keep coming back. I tell the truth. I remember when. I work the steps and experience a life beyond my wildest dreams. I've been rocketed into the dimension of the fourth existence. I have a marriage beyond my wildest dreams. I live where I want to live. I have a job that was not in my mission plan. I'm not really big on mission statements now because my higher power knows better than I do. I'm really just big on seeking and doing God's will. So I will close with one of my favorites. I have so many. With the closing line from the 12th step in the AA 12 and 12. And I think I'm even on time. Wish I could talk to you about service. Service, gladly rendered, obligations squarely met, troubles well accepted or solved with God's help, the knowledge that at home or in the world outside, we are partners in a common effort, the well-understood fact that in God's sight, all human beings are important, the proof that love freely given surely brings a full return, the certainty that we are no longer isolated and alone in self-constructed prisons, the surety that we need no longer be square pegs in round holes, but can fit and belong in God's scheme of things. And I'll tell you, that's what I love most about conventions. I just love seeing people that I know from all over the world and all over the state and all over the Southern California. These are the permanent and legitimate satisfactions of right living for which no amount of pomp and circumstance, no heap of material possessions could possibly be substitutes. True ambition is not what we thought it was. True ambition is the deep desire to live usefully and walk humbly under the grace of God. Thank you for letting me speak tonight.
Thank you so much. We have a 5-minute break, a quick break, and we're going to have our comedian. So if you need to use the facilities. Oh, if you don't have a ticket for the dance at this point, I have to ask you to please purchase one. I'm sorry. You've got to do it. Okay? So please go and buy a ticket for the dance because we'll kick your butt if you don't. Thank you. 5 minutes and then come right back.